Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here are your hosts, Vince Vitrano and Eric Bilstad.
Protests in Madison, arrest that cop, they're chanting. This after a police shooting that killed a 30-year-old man. Now an investigation is underway, and now the candidates for governor are even getting involved. So police were called to this area in Madison on Wednesday. It's less than 2 miles from the state capitol, on a report of a man trying to break into parked cars. Suspect took off on a bicycle, tried to get away. He was nabbed by four officers. This is near Willie and Baldwin, so it's a popular area. A lot of bars and restaurants in this stretch, and they struggled to get him under control. Here's the chief.
During the struggle, the man, we're told, pulled out a knife or produced a knife, a fixed blade knife, and an officer was injured by this while attempting to arrest him. A less lethal device, a taser, was deployed. Unfortunately, it was unsuccessful. The officer who was injured by the knife is the same officer who fired his weapon at this man.
That's Chief John Peterson. The man has yet to be identified. Do you know that it's a 30-year-old black man? The shooting was caught on video, and you and I have both watched it. Witnesses show the struggle of these officers dealing
They're
with
tangling
this guy.
With the
yeah,
guy.
Tangling. That's a great word. Yeah. Then came the protests. Demonstrators gathering at the state capitol during an event. They have concert on the square. It was canceled because of all the protesters there. Among those with the demonstrators later on the street was State Representative Francesca Hong, who we know is running for governor.
We cannot protect a system that continues to rain harm and terror. We all deserve to feel safe.
So that audio captured by the Journal Sentinel's Laura Schulte, who she captured a lot of video yesterday during all of this. Hong urged by protesters during her speech to call the shooting a murder.
This state-sanctioned violence was an execution.
Thank you.
So Mandela Barnes says he's deeply disturbed and pained by the video. David Crowley says it is painfully reminiscent of tragedies that have happened in Kenosha and Minneapolis. Joel Brennan says the Madison community deserves a full, transparent, and independent accounting of what happened. No family should have to wait for answers. And Kelderoy said full details aren't known, but added the suspect's life mattered and called for a thorough investigation and due process.
And the police chief did add in some of his remarks, this isn't the only piece of video or the only
Correct.
Angle or other things that may have transpired before that moment. And he's asking people to give them time to fully investigate.
Correct. That you. But the one thing we should point out, no body cam. Madison PD do not have body cam, but they say there should be, whether it's pointing in the right direction, some dash cam video that could be used.
Time for an update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All Sports Desk.
Brewers are off today. We bring in the Rockies tomorrow. And going on a high note, closing out the series with the Mets Wednesday afternoon.
Here's the pitch. Ewing, ground ball to third. Ortiz with a dive. Gets up, throws to first. Ball game over. The Brewers take 2 out of 3 against the Mets. It was a Joey Ortiz game. He goes 3 for 3, a homer shy of the cycle, and then makes a diving stab to win the ball game today.
Christian Yelich went 2 for 5 with a pair of runs batted in as well. The Brewers win 4-3. Starting pitcher Logan Henderson, 5 complete. Henderson got a career high 9 strikeouts. Ashby, Uribe, and McGill finish it out. Late afternoon baseball on Friday. Now, heads up, this is a 3:10 first pitch tomorrow against Colorado as the Brewers alumni game will take place immediately following.
We'd be better off listening to adhesive tape.
Yes, thanks, you. Saw a lot of folks last night. The broadcast team, Jeff Levering, Lane Grindle, Josh Maurer, Sophia Minert. We were all at this special screening of the Bob Uecker documentary, Uke.
Happening today.
Film is showing starting today at select Marcus theaters across Wisconsin. If you want to see it, check your Marcus Theaters listings, and you'll find showtimes through the weekend. The better it does, the longer it's going to stay on the big screen. So Love for a lot of fans to get out and see it in the theater.
Kind of a weird look, but I guess that's their thing.
So, what'd you think?
You know, first of all, the film was very well done. The emotion I felt overwhelmingly was sad. And I don't know if it's because we miss Uke.
Yeah.
Miss the man. We miss him on the radio. Watching guys that we know, like Lane and Josh and Levo, really detail in the film what they were going through, what they knew that we didn't about what Uke was struggling with there towards the end.
Yeah.
Reliving some of those final moments, his final call and that devastating loss in the playoffs to the Mets.
Yeah.
That wasn't great to revisit that moment either. Oh. So it was a good sad, right? But I felt sadness and reminded how much we miss Bob Uecker. So that is in Marcus Theaters today. They're across southeast Wisconsin and really around the whole state for a limited run.
Hey, we have some news that'll get you excited. Mark Tauscher, when he joins us every day at 7:50. You can also find him on the podcast page. He has breaking Badgers broadcasting news that he is going to share with us for the very first time. So what could it be?
Yes, I am leaving on a jet plane. Don't know if I'll be back again.
Yep, the EAA Air Venture is rolling on. We've got a big day today.
Happening today.
Wisconsin's Afternoon News broadcasting live from the grounds today. So that'll be pretty cool.
Taking the whole show on the road.
They're not broadcasting from the air. They'll be on the ground on site.
As far as we know, have you seen the rundown? Would you put it past Mercure to be up in a hot air balloon or something?
We are going to be. 3P to 6P today on WDTMJ. Now, you and I were there earlier this week. And one of the coolest aspects of EAA is when you meet all the pilots, first of all, but like a lot of these men and women who have built their own planes and then flew them in from God knows where, from all over the place. And then they park them all in this giant field, and they're all lined up, and there's little information about them, and you can walk from plane to plane, see how it was built, who built it. They're all right there. And many of them are actually like sitting in a chair, just kind of hanging out, talking to friends and comrades.
Waiting for you to come up and say, hey, tell me about this here plane.
Taking pictures and all that kind of stuff. So we spoke with a longtime pilot, Richard Zato, who works for Rutan Aircraft Flying Experience, which is basically a nonprofit that preserves and promotes Burt Rutan's home-built design. So this is a specific retired aerospace engineer who has a very popular line of home-built design airplanes. And some of them are very rare. Other ones are just very unique and just very popular. So there are home-built and then there are like kit planes. There's just different variations. So he kind of explained what a kit plane is.
There's a differentiation in plans built and kit planes. So the RVs and some of these other airplanes are kit planes. The semi-truck pulls up to your door, drops off a big crate. You pull it out, put it together like a model airplane.
Yeah, so you basically just get this delivered to your house, and it's got all the pieces, and they're huge. Like somebody, you just said a semi, and that will build a kit plane.
Okay.
There's a difference between that and a home-built plane, which he goes into a little bit of detail here. Here, basically, you are creating the whole thing. You're building a lot of the pieces yourself, or you order them special.
These airplanes were all built by hand. Every piece was built by hand. You get a set of plans, you get a set of drawings, you start cutting material, and there were a few aftermarket suppliers of like Ken Brock's of Machine Shop that Burton listed to make metal parts, you know, and things that required bearings, stuff like that. But I know a lot of home builders built those too. A friend of mine, Tom Wright, says he built as long as he $100 at a time and cut every piece of metal, every bell crank out of a sheet of aluminum with a hacksaw. Because he couldn't afford to buy the aftermarket parts. So, and that's the cool thing about these is people see these Warbirds and stuff, and that's all cool, and I fly them too. But those are multi-million-dollar airplanes or $100,000 airplanes, okay? And a lot of people can't relate to that.
Right.
But this airplane was built by a guy in his garage, you know? And you can relate to that because you supply the labor, okay? There's a lot of the cost of production right there, plus the education of building and the confidence of what you built.
I can't relate to the actually building an airplane in my garage, but I understand what he's saying.
Yeah, it's kind of like a car show, right? If you go to a car show and you see all these old cars, and a lot of guys are like, oh, what do you do on this one? It's the same kind of thing. It's just that you're flying these instead of driving them, which is just incredible. So he came in with his crew this past weekend. We did ask him, like, how did the smoke affect things? because a lot of the planes don't have instruments. And there was a moment there last week, EAA wasn't allowing you to land if you didn't have instruments. It was instrument-only planes could come down just because of all the smoke. And kind of downplayed that a little bit, really wasn't that concerned about it.
We plan ahead. We actually came up and staged in Watertown, Wisconsin, waited for the an opportunity, came up Saturday morning. It was a no-brainer for us, no problem at all. So, you know, these airplanes, we don't fly them in weather. I'm a retired airline guy, you know. I've done it all my life. These airplanes right here, we fly for fun. If it's not fun, we're not going flying.
What's the saying? I'd rather be on the ground wishing I were flying than up in the air wishing I were on the ground.
That's right. We haven't left one up there yet. So, yeah.
So EAA rolls on. Thanks to Richard Zato for the chat. Wisconsin's Afternoon News broadcasting live later today.
The two guys that batted in all the runs for the crew, sports at 6:45.
Will it have any ramifications? It may not. So we've been following the wakeboating concerns across the state of Wisconsin for the last couple of years here. Wakeboats, you know these ones. These are the ones that create that huge wake so people can kind of surf behind the boats. And there's a lot of people who don't like these boats. And there's a lot of people who do because they're super fun. But they cause a lot of chop. They can cause erosion on some of the smaller lakes, especially some shallower ones. So a lot of communities across the state have enacted ordinances to prevent people from wakeboating. Well, there was a federal lawsuit on this from the town of Scott, way up north, and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel says that it was thrown out. It was basically a couple of boaters were like saying, hey, this is preventing us from being able to boat and all that. But the town testified in the case saying, you know, we haven't really been able to stop them. We have never ticketed anybody because we don't really have the enforcement opportunities to stop people from wakeboating. So the judge threw out the case. He's like, well, you got nothing to complain about. The town hasn't stopped you guys from wakeboating.
That's interesting. It's an interesting reason to dismiss the suit.
So the Journal Sentinel says, because of that, though, the result is on paper a victory of the town since it won't have to pay any damages. However, it didn't provide what either side in the wake enhanced boating debate was seeking, which is like being able to use this moving forward in another case. So it's still kind of floating out there and it's nebulous as to how wake boating eventually will be taken care of or policed.
And in some of these cases, it's people who are putting boats in through public access points on a lake upon which they don't have property.
Right.
In some cases, it's people who live on the lake.
Yeah, yeah.
And say, look, I'm paying my property taxes here. I'm part of the lake, and this is the boat that I want to have on the lake.
And you can see both sides of it. A lot of folks, if they say it's unconstitutional, I just bought this really expensive boat, and now I can't use it except for 1 hour a day. And I can understand why other people don't like it on the water, because it can affect how it feels to be out.
I guess you could argue all around, good problems to have.
That's true.
What to do with my lake property and my giant boat. Milwaukee's at 61.
Time to honor an everyday hero on Wisconsin's Morning News. This is when we celebrate an average John or Jane Doe who had no idea when they got up one morning they'd be saving a life. Have you ever seen a car on the side of the road and driven past? Sometimes they're empty. Sometimes maybe you'll see somebody working on it. Sometimes a car might even look like it's parked funny or it's up in the air or something, and you just kind of keep on going, right? Well, Randy Farlack was on his way to work. He's 16 years old when he noticed on the side of this country road a car sitting in the ditch. Wasn't all the way in the ditch, but it was enough where he like, So this is rural Illinois. Morrison, Illinois is where this was taking place. And the 16-year-old kind of said, oh, you know what? That doesn't look right. The car seems to be off a little bit. So he drives a little bit further and kind of, something just not right.
I didn't know what might have been going on.
So he tells KWKVC TV 6 News, the car was sitting a little bit funny, didn't see anybody. He noticed other cars were just driving by, but he couldn't shake the feeling that something just didn't sit right. Yes.
I wasn't sure if something actually happened or if they just kind of accidentally went too far on the shoulder and just went in. So I turned around the town.
Yeah, so he gets into town, turns around. He's 16, by the way. Teenager, turns around, gets to the vehicle, finds the car is running and inside a woman unconscious at the wheel. He immediately grabs his phone.
Called 911 and did what they told me and just went through the whole thing
until they got here. The woman was taken to the hospital. She's now recovering, all thanks to this teenager, this 16-year-old. I know a few 16-year-olds. They don't quite show attentiveness ever.
Lucky if you see the car, much less do something
about
it, right?
Yes. He not only noticed it, but then he stopped and did something about it. Then he acted on it, too.
Mostly just right place at the right time, and then that I actually did the right thing, not just kept going.
So really appreciate the humility there. So he is a hero, and his advice to others, if you ever feel like something just doesn't seem right,
go with your gut and listen to what the dispatcher, whoever you called, is telling you to do. And if it seems sketchy, don't try to do it.
So thank you, Randy Gerlach, for being an everyday hero. Everyday hero? What?
I don't mean to take you away from what you're doing here. What did he say about the dispatcher if it seems sketchy?
Hold on a sec. I'll replay it.
Go with your gut.
Yep.
Listen to what the dispatcher, whoever you called, is telling you to do. And if it seems sketchy, don't try to do it.
The 911 operator? You called them, man.
I don't think that's what he meant.
Or who else might you have called?
But, you know, he makes a good point.
Sean Wendt?
I mean, if he's told by one of those people, you know, to do something that sounds funny, don't.
I guess. All right. That's good advice.
What'd you pay for those things? 100 apiece.
So the Euchre documentary. It hits theaters, Marcus Theaters, across the state starting today. We'll run at least through the weekend, and the more folks go to see it, the better it does, the longer it's going to be on the big screen.
Okay.
So encourage a lot of folks to get out and see that, as we're joined by ESPN's Jen Latta.
How did you see it?
There was a special screening. A number of folks from the Brewers were there and a few others, invite only, and it was a day before the release so that we would have a chance to have seen it. As we're talking about its release today,
it does feel like maybe I should be able to get on that list, huh?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm a storyteller by trade. I tell these type of human interest stories on a pretty regular basis. I feel like I would be a good person.
I'll just bring you as my guest next time. Does that work for you?
Just send me the email of whoever organized the thing, and I'm going to be like, hello, my name is Jen Latta. You killed my father. No, I'm just kidding. But yes, I would have loved to have been at the premiere last night to see that film.
So my takeaway on it, Eric asked earlier, it was very well done. There were a few things that you said, Bob Euchre, like, haven't we heard all the stories? Haven't we done all the things? There were things in there that I learned about Euchre, about his family, about his past. There's a ton of Johnny Carson, some clips that I hadn't seen, a little bit about how that all came together. I didn't know how he ever got on Johnny Carson. I just knew that he was on. So there's a lot in there about that. But my overwhelming emotion after was just sadness. I'm reminded of how much I miss Bob Euchre as a guy that once in a while you might run into and have a conversation with. But beyond that, just how much we miss him on the radio.
Ooh, that's so interesting. It reminds me of that phrase that's like, don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened.
Yeah.
Right? Because
and there was plenty of that. There was plenty of smiling and remembering those moments.
I read something recently, and this is a little off topic, but stay with me, follow the bouncing ball, that said that the key to happiness is savoring. I read this recently, okay? And I'm thinking about it now because how much did we savor, right? The relationship, the connection that we had to Bob Euchre, just as a collective Brewers society. I think a lot.
Yeah.
I think we did. I think we appreciated that he loved Milwaukee. We loved him. No matter how bad the Brewers were, and they were bad for long stretches, he was always going to advocate for them and be their biggest cheerleader. And that is unique. I mean, maybe not. Maybe there are people like that in other cities with other franchises and whatnot. But I really think that Milwaukee did an incredible job of celebrating Bob Euchre when he was here and certainly celebrating his legacy now that he's gone. So I don't know if that makes you less sad. But, you know, if savoring is the key to happiness, and savoring, by the way, let me just put this out there, means not watching things through your phone, not recording the concert on your phone so you can go back and watch it later on or whatever. It's being in the moment and whatever you are currently doing, enjoying it for what it is because this moment will be gone and never to, you know, repeat.
You made me think of something else that I think people would be interested to hear, and I don't remember if this is widely known, but the Yankees made a strong play for Euchre to bring him over as their guy. In fact, Steinbrenner brought him into when Brewers were playing the Yankees in a series, and Steinbrenner called him into his box and had a conversation. And that's when, you know, Commissioner Emeritus steps in, then owner of the Brewers, Selig, and is like, what do we have to do? But you're not going anywhere. And Uke's commitment to, because we do forget that he was a national treasure. That would have been a great fit for Uke.
This is a really good time to put the movie out there because of how well the Brewers are doing once again and having the best record in baseball. And a guy like Joey Ortiz, who had not done well, who had struggled, who people were calling for to get out of the lineup
third
and replace.
Joey.
And he had, and now he's crushing it at third base. Christian Yelich, who just the other day we were like, do you got to move him down in the lineup? Do you need to bench Yelly? He's really struggling. Goes out there. He's clutch last night.
Two for five, two RBIs.
Unbelievable. So like, I feel like it's a really good time to be celebrating and I'm going to use the word again, savoring. What is happening with the Brewers right now, right? Because I have made the mistake before of being like, I got too much going on. It's summer. My kids are home. We're bopping around. Bah, 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 bah. But over the last 2 years, I have made a priority of prioritizing the Brewers so that I can enjoy the ride and not just at the end go, oh, I wish I had watched the Brewers more. I wish I had been along for that roller coaster ride.
You think we're going to go out and get another arm?
I think the Brewers are going to make a move. I think they recognize that this is unique territory. I think they see that the opportunity that is in front of
them.
The
window is open.
Correct. And again, we keep laughing about the Jeff Passan line. You jump through it. And we're like, don't do that. Don't jump through windows. That feels like bad advice. But the idea of seizing the opportunity that has presented itself, and they have done such a great job of putting themselves in this spot. I think you got to go out and make a move to solidify the roster.
Brewers General Manager Matt Arnold joins us in Brewers 360 at 8:40.
Oh, good.
He'll tell us exactly who he's going after and what he's willing to give up to get there.
Ask some good questions, journalists.
Thanks, Jen.
Whoa! That didn't take long.